Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to my new show, my new time slot from 3 to 5. We're running a little bit behind because of sports, but please set your clocks for my new time slot after lunch, before dinner, 3 to 5. We normally are going to be taking your legal questions in the last hour, but today we're going to be taking your legal questions about 4:30, so get them ready. If you have any comments or questions about things you've seen in the news or questions about your personal legal matters, I'm happy to take them here, 312-981-7200. Let's get right to it. We have a guest waiting. President Trump nominated Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court, and confirmation hearings will start soon, and we're going to see a lot about that. Much talk has been bantered about gender and religion and conservative bent, and how will this perhaps impact her decision making. And I wanted to get somebody who is right there and who knows this kind of thing. And the best guest I could ever imagine is Justice Thomas Kilbride, who is an Illinois Supreme Court justice. He's been one for 20 years. He served as the chief for a three-year period. He has been a fabulous judge, and I've known him for years and followed his career. I think the best of him, and he's up for retention this November 3rd. Welcome to the show, Justice Kilbride. How are you doing?
Well, good afternoon, Karen. I'm doing fine. Thanks.
Great to hear your voice. So let's talk about this issue. Tell us about, does diversity make a difference on the bench? Should we be looking for people from different walks of life, and does it make a difference in how cases are decided?
Well, yes and no. Yes, we should look for diversity on the bench, and no, I don't think it necessarily means diversity will give you different decisions. I served with three women on the court, on the Illinois Supreme Court. Initially, one woman was Justice Marianne McMorrow, then later Justice Garmon joined the court, and then Ann Burke and Mary Jane Tice. So actually, I've served with four different women on the Illinois Supreme Court, and at this time, we've got three women, and I don't see them all voting together or all against the majority, and it differs on a case and the issue and so forth. And I'm not going to go on and on.
Yeah. When you have an issue that comes to you up in the appellate court, and we're going to talk a little bit about the mechanics of how the court works in a minute. But, I mean, you don't just, and again, I think I hear a lot of people say, well, she's a Catholic, so she's definitely going to vote against Roe versus Wade. That's not how you look at a case, is it? You look at it from other purposes, right? Like the law and like case precedent, right?
Well, absolutely. That's the first thing we look at, is the court precedent and the case precedent, the constitutional framework to set this straight, and then the case law precedent. That's correct.
And how important is precedent? Can you explain to our listeners what it means to follow case precedent?
Well, it's very important. It can be very frustrating. Sometimes our hands are tied in the context of a case that predates us. And our court has authority to set aside precedent, but it's an extreme situation when that happens. It's rare, and there's a whole protocol of standards that have to be developed in the writing of the opinion to be able to step outside precedent. But that happens.
Well, and
rarely,
Oh, I'm sorry. But I suppose it makes sense that we have precedent, because you don't want courts going back and forth, changing their minds, because we wouldn't have any surety in the law then.
That's right. Stability is extremely important, and lawyers, litigants who bring their cases, need to have a sense that where the ball's going to land in the park, so to speak.
Right. And, you know, I'm sorry, we just got started, but I'm going to have to take a break. But you're going to stay with us a little bit after 4 o'clock. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. We're here with Justice Thomas Kilbride from the Illinois Supreme Court, and we'll be back in a minute on the Karen Conti Show. Welcome back. Illinois Supreme Court Justice Thomas Kilbride is our special guest tonight. He's one of my favorite judges in all the state of Illinois. He's up for retention on November 3rd. Welcome back to the show. Let's talk a little bit, Justice, about kind of court procedure 101. How do cases come before the Illinois Supreme Court, and how are they processed and how are they decided?
Well, not any case lands in the Illinois Supreme Court. There are a few categories that are mandatory, and that's based on the Constitution. When the death penalty was in place, that was an automatic challenges to redistricting are automatically in the Supreme Court. And otherwise, and there's some other odd categories too complicated to talk about, but the general rule is that people have to file a petition for leave to appeal. That simply means, please take my case, and we, the seven of us, decide to take or not take a given case. That's the general procedure.
And how do you decide that? What makes a case something that you think the Illinois Supreme Court should decide?
Well, we have certain factors in Rule 315 that the public isn't necessarily well versed in, but you know, whether or not there's a conflict in the appellate court, the importance of the question that's presented, whether or not it's a question of first impression that can cut both ways, meaning the first time a question has been examined in the law. And sometimes if it's first impression, we say let it bubble up through the appellate court, or it's important enough that we need to take it now and answer the question to give guidance to the trial courts and the appellate court.
So if the court decides to take the case, the lawyers will file briefs, right?
Correct.
And you have law clerks who help you. What role do the law clerks? Much has been made about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she had a lot of very loyal clerks who showed up in Washington for her funeral, which I thought was very touching. And they become very, very loyal to their bosses. I'm sure you've had some wonderful clerks over the years. What do they do? What is their part in the procedure?
Well, the law clerks are basically a research team to prepare the cases. They read through the briefs. They do all the research that needs to be done and help us draft opinions as well as actual one-on-one conversations and more often than not a team conversation among all the clerks in my office. We call it roundtabling a given case. And they're elbow clerks, which means they're next to us. But during these times of COVID, everybody's working remotely and we
right.
communicate via the computer.
So by the time the case has an oral argument where the lawyers appear and they are given a certain amount of time to argue, do you generally have your mind made up at that point, or does an oral argument sometimes sway you?
Oral arguments definitely can sway the pendulum. No, I don't have my mind made up. That's the whole purpose in having oral arguments, to resolve questions that might be pending given the briefs that have gone back and forth, and sometimes a particular argument's been addressed, but the other side really hasn't done a good job of clarifying their position. So sometimes we get into those questions as well.
So after the oral arguments, what's the next step?
Well, we have an immediate conference after the conclusion of our arguments, and we sit around the table by seniority. And the chief calls each one of the cases that's been argued, and we take what's called an impression vote, where each justice will indicate whether he or she would affirm or reverse the lower court, that in the case of lower be appellate in these cases. And that is just an impression. And then one of the seven of us has been assigned to author the case, and we go back to our chambers in between court terms, between September in November, for example. Right now, we're working on draft opinions to present to our colleagues at the November court term, and they're circulated in advance of our meeting face-to-face.
So a lot goes into making these decisions, and they're important. By the time they get up to your court, they're determining the interpretation of laws, and like you said, if there's conflicts in different areas about how a law is to be interpreted or if a law is constitutional, these are very, very important decisions.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, you as a judge, as a state judge, run as a Democrat or Republican, and you run for retention. You're up for retention November 3rd. The federal system has a system of appointment that, and you're basically a judge for life. What are, I know a lot of people complain that they don't know the judges, and they go into the ballot with the ballot and they don't know anybody or any names, or they don't know how to choose judges, and that it's a waste of time. What do you say about that? Do you think judges are best elected?
Well, it's a real problem, and I don't know what the best solution is. I don't want to say one way or the other is a better one. Right now, I would prefer it be an appointment process and somebody could appoint me to stay on the bench, but under the Illinois system, under the Illinois Constitution, it's mandated when we first run for office, we run on a partisan ballot. When we seek extension of our court term, our court service for retention, we don't run on a party ballot, simply yes or no. There's no party affiliation whatsoever. And just to give one other piece of background, the 1970 Constitution that we operate under today gave the voters in the state of Illinois the choice to either have appointed judges or elected judges. And when the Constitution was ratified by the voters in the state of Illinois, they selected elections. They rejected the idea of appointments. And there are those who say, well, if you look at our recent history with Governor Blagojevich, Governor Ryan, people would question, well, if we had them making the appointments, maybe we wouldn't be so fond of those appointments. I don't know, but it's a debate.
Yeah, it's an ongoing debate among lawyers as well. And as we're watching the nomination proceedings, and again, I'm not asking you to weigh in on Amy Coney Barrett, but there's some allegations that she is a very strict Catholic and those types of things. How do you respond when people say, well, she's definitely going to vote her religion and we don't want her on the bench because of this, or we want her on the bench because we know she's going to strike down certain Roe versus Wade. I mean, what do you say to people when you hear that kind of talk? Is that fair?
I don't think it's fair. I think judges have to be given the benefit of the doubt. I've been surprised in looking at other judges who you might suspect would rule one way versus the other, and they drive it right down the middle of the lane, and that's the way it's supposed to be done within the confines of the constitutional mandates that we have to work within, as well as the statutory parameters that the legislature gives us. And you don't know what a judge or justice is going to do in a case, whether it's the trial court, appellate court, or the Supreme Court of the United States.
And I assume that once in a while, and maybe more often than once in a while, you rule in a way that you don't like the outcome, but you did your job and you followed faithfully what you were supposed to do. Is that fair to say?
That's more than fair to say. There, I'm not going to name the cases, but there have been cases we've dealt with that I felt we were kind of our hands are tied based on, the requirements or the limitations within state statutes of how cases are presented. And we're not, there's three separate branches of government, the executive, but with the governor, the legislature, and the judicial. We're a check and a balance, and we don't get to make public policy. We're not there to select what we think would be the best policy. So that's one of the difficult job aspects of the job.
Justice Thomas Kilbride, thank you so much for joining us. And if people are voting for retention for you on November 3rd, what district, what area of the state will they be voting?
It's called the 3rd Judicial District. It doesn't mean anything to most people, but it's the eastern side of the state from Will County, Joliet, Kankakee, Iroquois counties, across Interstate 80, Grundy, LaSalle, Bureau, Henry, Rock Island County, and then south down to Peoria, Hancock, Tazewell counties, those areas where Pekin and Carthage, Illinois are in those counties.
Well, good luck in your retention, and I'm sure that you're going to do well, and always good to talk to you, and I hope to see you soon.
Okay, thank you,
Karen.
All
right, thanks for joining my show.